everyone, and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola. It's Friday, which means we've got a lot of things for you. The first of those, though, is Brett Ehrlich, host of the Happy Half Hour. Brett, how is it going?
Paging Dr. Boy, Dr. Birthday Boy.
It is your birthday, John. We have a celebratory. Everything. You won the House Cup. That's you winning the House Cup. That's from Harry Potter, what you're holding. Everybody knows that. It is your birthday. Cuckoo-ca-choo. This was already within 2 feet of me and had been for weeks. Our wife made a very festive sign.
Hey, I'm looking at sign.
It is your birthday. And so I would hope the entire Dragon Squad would take a moment. I made you this from scratch.
That looks really good, actually.
And everyone sing to Jahan Matthew Iadarola. Happy birthday to you. Hey, Hype Train. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday to you.
Now blow out that falsetto.
Blow out the candle. I always do the high harmony on the birthday.
Okay.
Blow it out harder. Look at that. Amazing.
Oh my God. I had to blow all the way to Manhattan Beach.
thanks, Docs Parade.
It's a big area. I think you're going to be okay.
So if you want to send John a birthday, here's his address.
Okay, that was very sweet. Thank you. I like the song.
So it's not just that. Here is all
I get to choose an hour of sleep or an hour of TV.
Yep. I got you a chiclet. Here is what, there's another element to this. And I haven't even seen this yet. And like four people tried really hard to spoil it for everyone, but just because they were so excited. Here is the deal. Cenk, as part of the revival of Between Me and Uyghur last night, if we hit that level 5 hype train, he revealed a drawing he did of John Iadarola. We're gonna show it to you in a second. But a drawing he did of you. And they hit the level 5 hype train and they did reveal it. And apparently it is one of the, he pitched it as the worst thing anyone has ever seen in their lives. And we coincidentally on this episode of the Damage Report have already blown by 290% hype train. I only imagine what's happening with the YouTube audience, who I love, but slightly less than the Twitch audience. So as a reward for your amazingness and gratitude for John and the entire audience, we're gonna show you the drawing that I haven't seen yet, John hasn't seen yet, of John the birthday boy Iadarola. So
let's see this.
Everyone hold on to your butts, as they say here.
Of who I am and what, like the worst artist in the world. Okay, now. You ready to break the internet? Here we go. Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay, now it's a why? Why did I do that? Like, that's the most unacceptable picture of all time. Like,
can't even.
Yes, so, I know what it looks like. Yes. As soon as I drew his neck, I was like, what have I done? What have I done? Okay.
Thank you, Hunter. Yes, Hunter Biden's crack says that's a penis. And I will say it's a just like the proportions. Is this a weird thing to say? It's the kind of penis that if you get it into you, you can't get it out of you. It's got a locking mechanism.
Okay. So I don't know what part of this is the most troublesome.
It's either that a penis or threw a me at all.
That he drew me as a penis, or that I think he drew me as a close-up shot of Donald Trump's penis.
The worst is the weird goiter on the neck. It's like a vein, but
is this, what's with the hair?
Why is this happening?
Frederick Joseph's gonna start streaming on our Twitch channel, and I wonder if he's thinking like, what did I just get into?
Remember when Cenk saw me and you making fun of him on Cuomo? Like, wait, this is what, if I tune into his show, this is what I'm gonna see?
Hello, someday.
Well, I think I've reached peak birthday and I think I'm good now. Thank you for that, Cenk. You're the best.
I like no ears, but
I don't have ears. And I don't even have like a square jaw. That's not even reflective of me. Why is my neck so long? Why is my neck so long? It wouldn't have looked like a penis if you hadn't done the neck. And that slow fade, no, don't do that. I don't like that.
That looks like the kind of thing that like they give like in a Marvel movie when there's like a child with like severe trauma and special powers. They're like, draw your family, and it draws that, and they're like,
oh no.
Are wrong with him than we could ever have imagined.
This is gonna be a problem. Okay, Cenk, do I bring it up on the show today or do I just avoid it? That may be better. I don't know.
Draw a picture of him.
I should draw a picture of him. And it's just a vagina. It's just a vagina.
Here, I drew a picture of Cenk.
Don't do it. Don't do it. No, I can't take anymore.
There he is. Here, I drew a picture of Cenk. It's just a butthole.
I love that Brett can draw an. Oh my God, it's already an emoji. What is going on? Here's what I love. On YouTube. Who made that?
It's a demo. I can't. Everyone go dark mode quick. Probably way better for that.
Oh my God, it's the most thing. It's the best emoji ever.
But I can't. I don't wanna. I wanna go back to sleep. Maybe
put that in for that contest on Twitch. So on YouTube, someone uploaded an emoji. I assume Norma made it of like a happy birthday John thing. And this is what I get on Twitch. Thank you very much. Oh my God. Wait, what's that emoji? I like that one.
The mouth's open.
DPTV scream. That's good. Oh my God.
John, let's not do a show today. Let's just hang out.
Let's just play Rust. If this is anyone's first time tuning in, I am so sorry.
For those of you listening to the podcast, we so far on today's show
have
blown out a candle on a cake. Oh, also John's a penis head.
I'm a penis head. There's so many of them. This is where I've already been harassed with that AOC emote that they put together in a few seconds, and now this.
One part. I don't know how you're one part. The ethereal pan-dimensional beings in the movie Soul, nine parts wiener.
Nine parts, yeah, that's what it's feeling like. Oh, geez. Okay, well,
why?
That's now a thing. Never getting away from that. Johnny Pie's gone. That's just penis heads. This the new thing. Anyway, yay! Thank you, birthday. Let's do news, I guess. I don't know. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Get AOC out of there.
Please hit the like button if you haven't. No, don't alternate between those two. Like, she's already never going to come back on the show. Now there's no chance. Anyway.
That's what John would feel like if he was in a room with AOC. Not the penis aspect, but just like the.
Hi, nice to see you. I miss you.
Crazy thing is, she came here and it was yet another famous politician that I missed because I stupidly went to spend time with a friend.
I was in the building, but I had to work when she walked by, and I was like, I'll stay late and I'll sit at my desk until she comes out of the studio and I'll say, hey, I'm Brett. Nice to meet you. You probably heard of me. And there I am sitting hours later being like, I wonder when they're going to be done with that interview. And someone came over and like, she left like 90 minutes ago.
Gosh, my heart hurts. It's too much. Okay, well, that was fun. We've got a lot of fun for you, okay? Including my garbage person. It's disturbing, but it's going to get fun. So we're going to go on that's basically the damage report is you get really disturbed, then hopefully you have a little bit of fun. So we're going to have that experience again today. Jesus, these emojis have become the high point and simultaneous low point of my life.
I'll give it that. Thank you, everybody. Send us messages, we'll respond. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. I forgot to tweet about this. I'm gonna try to fit in at some point, but why don't we jump into our first story?
Don't say fit it in.
Continue.
The Senate was desperately trying to move forward on the new stimulus bill, and the Republicans decided, well, we've waited this long, why not make everyone wait a bit longer? So last night in Votapalooza, the lamest music fest ever, like 500 amendments, pointless amendments that have no, they don't mean anything, they're non-binding, were put forward by Republicans to try to slow it down. And finally, at 5:30 a.m. local time, Bernie Sanders, who I assume probably likes to get to bed by 8:15 at the latest, was still going, and he had this to say.
Madam Vice President.
Senator from Vermont.
We now come to the end of a debate that has gone on for over 14 hours. And we end this debate in a moment in which our country faces more crises, more pain, more anxiety than at any time since the Great Depression. And with the passage of this resolution, we have the opportunity not only to address the pandemic, to address the economic collapse, to address the reality that millions of our kids have seen their education disrupted, but we have the opportunity to give hope to the American people and restore faith in our government by telling them that tonight we understand the pain that they are experiencing, and we are going to do something very significant about it. In the strongest possible terms, I ask for a yes vote on this enormously important budget resolution.
Yes, so very strong. He's totally right. It's a chance for them to finally tell people who feel like the government has largely abandoned them over the past year that they do actually care and they are listening. They do get the pain that people are feeling. And finally, after all of that, the procedural motion passed without a single Republican supporting it. My God. There, like, I guess it's Senate versus House is different, but there are more Republicans willing to impeach Trump than approve of stimulus. That's crazy. There's 50 of them, and there's not one. You can't get 2% of the Republican Party to be like, yeah, I guess people should get a little bit of money. You can't even do that. That's crazy, Brett.
And you can't get a single Republican to really articulate what they don't like. Right?
It's
like,
what
is their vote is just like, can't, too much. Mm-hmm. That's it. Not taking into account literally anything about America, right? Yeah. So, well, maybe some nebulous idea about like, we fought the communists in the 80s and the 90s and today. Like, it's a radio channel, but like, something, something, socialism, communist, fall of the Western world. And they'll say capital W, all that stuff. It. But that's it. Yeah. What the Democrats can say is, well, when it comes to $1,400 checks, 60% of Republicans are behind it. Crickets from the other side. 60% of people in, hey, Georgia, reddest of red states of the union. Do you want checks or not? You want $2,000 or not? They say, yes, I would like $2,000 now. Thank you. And it's and that's what happened. And the Republican Party has completely ignored that. And this is the logical conclusion of Democrats having to just go around that and deal with it. And you know what? The way the rules are set up, where we are now, they can and they did, and they'll continue to do so, hopefully.
And you know, it's amazing that like, the Republicans regularly give the people a middle finger to the things they actually want. Even in the worst domestic year of our entire lives, people are suffering more than they ever have before. The GOP doesn't care. And they're just like, don't, we're not giving you anything. We're not giving you literally anything. And what do you know? They're unpopular. And so they lose national elections by millions and millions of votes, and they lose Georgia. And their response to all of that, that equation is, well, clearly it's rigged. No, stop doing stuff. Like, you know that people hate you. The stuff you want to get done isn't popular, and you want to block all the stuff that the people need. It's not going to make you popular.
But this is natural. Now, this is also like linked to term limits, right? Like, this has always been the case with America, and especially with realignments. You hate Congress. You love your congressperson for a lot of reasons. One, you know them. It takes so much to learn a name in politics, period.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, like, look at massive realignments in America before. Like, I say Georgia's the reddest of red states. It wasn't until 2004 that they became, I think it was around 2004 that they got a Republican governor for the first time since the Civil War. Why? Because they just kept voting for the same person over and over and over again. And that person theoretically represents them and has every institutional reason to blame the problem on the institution. But this is the kind of lag that happens until people are forced to pick a new name.
Let me fill people in on some of the things that were tried to pass during that Votapalooza. Senator Todd Young offered an amendment to block stimulus payments to undocumented immigrants. It passed, again, non-binding, but with 8 Democrats voting in favor of it. That's cool. An amendment by Senator Steve Daines to overturn Biden's move blocking completion of the Keystone XL pipeline also passed with 2 Democrats, Joe Manchin and John Tester. Democrats rejected GOP amendments related to packing the Supreme Court, seems relevant to this, and blocking stimulus checks from going to inmates. Those ones didn't actually pass. Democrats also united to defeat an amendment that would have banned a federal tax on carbon. Manchin joined the Democratic votes despite his opposition in the past to similar taxes. So they were just mostly, it was just to slow things down. It was to be able to say that they proposed something. And again, remember, after all of this, even with some of the amendments they wanted being passed, like for instance, Todd Young got his amendment to block stimulus payments to undocumented immigrants, and then he voted against the bill that now included his amendment. Because again, they don't actually care about this. They don't consider it to be a serious problem. They don't care that people are suffering, that jobs are going away, that people are still dying. That's just not a thing that they care about. Or at least if you believe that they do, there's no evidence you can point to that it is true. Maybe they put out a tweet, but when it comes to actually helping people, to actually putting their money where their tweets are, they're not interested in it. So here's the downside though. It passing that procedural hurdle last night does not mean that the stimulus is coming tomorrow. Now the Congress can turn in earnest to writing the actual proposal into law and pushing it through the Senate, possibly without any Republican votes, I would imagine, because of rules passed last night. The process is gonna take weeks, and right now they're eyeing mid-March as the deadline for final passage of it. And again, I understand it's a big bill and it needs to be passed, and it should have been done the last time when they cut it down to almost nothing. But my God, all of this takes so long. And that's why when we say things like, I know that we don't want to have another debate about whether it was 2000 or 1400. But if it was 2000 on January 3rd, that it should have been, why by mid-March is it the same amount? Did people in the 2.5 months between January 3rd and when they're going to pass it, do they not have more bills?
Especially
more people in their family not more sick? Did they not have to pay two more rent checks? Like, how is it the same amount after all of that time?
And not a rhetorical, is a rhetorical question, but yeah, it shouldn't be. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's how detached they are. But that's how much faith they have in their messaging. And the Senate especially is a 6-year rotating term limit setup. So at any every 2 years, only a third of the Senate is up for re-election. They get 6-year terms. And so that's why the Senate and this procedural stuff, that's why the Senate, which they don't have any limits on how long they're allowed to talk, really. That's why this stuff takes so long. And it's built into the system, and that's fine, but I absolutely agree with you 100%. I did the math for you last month. That's like the devil's advocate. Let's analyze their math in that it's $600 should cover you for 3 months. That's how everyone's bills work, right? No, they don't.
Not at all.
It's rough. It's super rough.
Yeah.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFDR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFDR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFDR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
During last night's House floor session, there was a lot of amazing speeches in support of removing Marjorie Greene from our committees for insert a billion insane, unacceptable, and violent conspiracy theories. And I want to highlight a few, starting with Representative Ilhan Omar.
About who we are as a body and what we are as a democracy. This is about whether it is acceptable to cheer on and encourage an insurrection against our basic democratic process. This is about whether it is okay to demand members swear in on a Bible of a religion they do not practice. This is about whether it is okay to hold an assault rifle next to members' heads in a campaign ad and incite death threats against them. This is about whether it is okay to encourage the murder of the Speaker of the House.
Yes, all of those things should, I think we can agree, be unacceptable. But we do have to keep reminding people, because there has been this campaign by the right to just pitch her as kooky or wacky or a little bit different. No, she believes very specific, potentially violent things. She has supported violence against current elected politicians. Ilhan Omar talked about, you know, fleeing a country that was experiencing political violence and saying that this is not a thing that's just going to go away. We need to actually do something about it. And so good there by Representative Omar.
Yes, it's and that it's one of those things where you find you hear yourself saying it out loud and you can't believe that it's actually happening. So she said, she's just asking, is it okay to say that you want to kill Nancy Pelosi? And that I mean, I know you're going to get to Hoyer, but just all we're trying to do is point out what she's saying and not cancel her or put her in jail, but just to have consequences for this kind of stuff. Yes, the people who voted for Marjorie Taylor Greene put her in Congress. That's it. Every other thing that she's asking for is just this crazy sense of entitlement that she has to be on these committees when her party doesn't have power. And yes, the parties carve out the ability to do this kind of stuff, but to assign their own people to the Congress. But there's also mechanisms like this very one that they're doing right now to check that power. It is just a check on that power within the rules of the House of Representatives.
Yeah. And they look, again, it seems pointless to point this out because they're not operating in good faith, but they do actually, despite all evidence to the contrary, get the idea of consequences when they're trying to remove Liz Cheney from Republican leadership for voting to impeach the president. They get consequences when Trump is gearing up for a national speaking tour to attack all of the 10 who voted to impeach him. They get consequences. They're not worried about cancel culture in that case again. Cancel culture, like so many political terms, has been turned into a thing that means literally nothing. But Ilhan Omar was great. I want to skip ahead to Rashida Tlaib. She gave some of the most emotional testimony last night. So let's take a look at what Representative Tlaib had to say.
This is so hard because, as many of my colleagues know, my closest colleagues know, on my very first day of orientation, I got my first death threat. It was a serious one. They took me aside. The FBI had to go to the gentleman's home. I didn't even get sworn in yet. And someone wanted me dead. for just existing. More came later, uglier, more violent. One celebrating and writing the New Zealand massacre and hoping that more would come. Another mentioning my dear son, Adam. Mentioning him by name. Each one paralyzed me each time. So what happened on January 6th, all I could do was thank Allah that I wasn't here. I felt overwhelming relief, and I feel bad for Alexandria, so many of my colleagues that were here. But as I saw it, I thought to myself, thank God I am not there. I saw the images that they didn't get to see until later.
So obviously very emotional. You know, I was tearing up this morning watching that. A reminder to everyone that these concerns that these representatives have are not, they're not fake. They've been getting these death threats for a very long time. Having a woman serving next to them who has called for the murder of Speaker Pelosi, or at least thinks it deserves a good thumbs up, is not nothing. It's not making it about you. It's not being emotional. It's not manipulative. It's true. It's true. And they get terrified about things as well, things that are far more abstract than the direct death threats to members of their family that all of these women have experienced. It is real. We do need to do something about it. It is so sickening how casual it's become to pretend that any of these individuals worrying about violence against them is meaningless. And to do so in a context where I know that if she talked about a death threat to her son, if some crazy MAGA head had gone and killed her son, they would be running interference for that person. No, it's not a true MAGA, but it's not a true MAGA person. They don't really like Trump. Islamophobia is not really a thing. They would do that. They would do that. And so again, as we were saying with what AOC said on Instagram Live, like this is not new to them, this fear. And the fact that they keep serving, knowing that there are entire media companies who devote a great deal of their time to demonizing about these women, and yet they still do it. That is incredibly admirable. It's incredibly difficult.
And it's so insidious and so boring to me. Like I am so tired of that dynamic, because it's just intentionally, or it's utterly disingenuous. They're when they revert back to these kinds of attacks. That's what's so frustrating. That's one of the aspects that's like very specifically frustrating about it. It's just so tried. Mm-hmm. It's just so old and crusty. And they look around in the way they're like, should we move on? As we're sitting here, you know, saying, you know, we notice people are kind of calling for unity. What do we want? No, we're gonna have BS attempts for unity.
Last night, during the testimony around Marjorie Greene's potential expulsion from her committees, Steny Hoyer, he brought a prop, a powerful one, a reminder of what Marjorie Greene had been saying, not way back 2 years ago, but during the campaign. Here he is.
Indisputably, these are clear threats to commit or incite political violence, not from years ago, but just months ago. Imagine the pain that these members' families must be experiencing when they see pictures like this one. Imagine what our children think, their children. And they're not the squad. They're Elon. They're Alexandria. And they're Rashida. They are people. They are our colleagues. And yes, you may have disagreements. But I don't know anybody, including Steve King, who you precluded from going on committees for much less. And this is an AR-15 in the hands of Ms. Green. This was on Facebook just a few months ago.
Add that to the list of things that she did not apologize for. That image with defeat the Democrats in full, like you held a gun
because you like the imagery of you being the person with the gun next to these people that you've said need to go back to their country, and that they weren't properly sworn in because they didn't swear in a Bible, even though that's not true. It's just a threat to violence. That's all it is. And we're supposed to pretend that it's not, or that there's some ambiguity, or the water's a little bit muddy. It's not. It's not. She had the gun to threaten them. In the chat, someone was reminding us of the story of the gun dealer who had a big billboard with the squad on it. That's not a thing that we then have to debate to try to figure out what was going on in their minds. It doesn't require some sort of mind reader. We know exactly what it was. They like either threatening directly, or they much more so. Marjorie Greene knows that her voters want violent threats against these women. That's why she puts out images like that.
Yes. And yeah, it is undebatable. And then their counter argument that you hear all over the place is something to the effect of, well, she's just a freshman congresswoman, which is so frustrating in every possible respect. Because first of all, she was asked this morning about her, how she's like AOC. And she's like, well, and this is after doing like a more technical apology this morning in front of the, you know, in DC. And then she went on and was asked like, what is, you know, people are comparing you to AOC. And after she's fielding a question from OANN. And she's like, I think we're the same because we don't really care what other people think of us. The only difference is AOC likes communism and I don't. But it's like, no, you are the person out there with a photo of you holding a gun next to her face. That's different. There's a huge difference. We did a story last week about how they call AOC and Marjorie Taylor Greene mischief makers. No. The one mischief maker is trying to follow, just currently right now, follow through on a promise that that we made with the American people that we would get them $2,000 in aid. And it was voted on in Georgia. And now they're trying, and what is Marjorie Taylor Greene advocating for? Attention, really, just attention. And I put this up on Play Out B, but it's worth showing, and it's got a main show like graphics to it. But here is a poll of Republican voters, and those Republican voters, when asked, do they like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Liz Cheney, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy? They like Marjorie Taylor Greene a hell of a lot more than they like Liz Cheney. The reason that she's not as, you know. Tucker Carlson says, oh my God, is Marjorie Taylor Greene suddenly this touchstone for what the Republicans believe? Well, there's your evidence that the answer we can say is yes. Mm-hmm. She is that thing that really is what his entire party is flocking toward. They try to belittle it, the crazy aspect of it, when they're talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene. And then they blow up a false characterization of AOC and say that that represents the entire Democratic Party. It's frustrating on so many levels because maybe AOC represents more Democratic voters when you ask them about policy. But those policies are wildly popular among Americans. And when you don't put like Biden in front of it, it's popular with Republican voters. 60% of them want those the balance of the $2,000 promise. Yeah. Probably more if you ask them. That's what's so wildly frustrating about all this, is that they're trying to draw false equivalencies when in reality, Marjorie Taylor Greene is advocating and has very recently in the not too distant past for murdering people. And she is not a patriot. Because do you think she calls herself a patriot because she wants people to swear on her religion's book? That is the least American thing in the world. The pilgrims that she probably thinks founded America came here to get religious freedom. Freedom from the government's mandate of a specific kind of religion. Four presidents have sworn on books that aren't the Bible. But she doesn't know that, not because she is protecting America, but because she is trying to ruin America through some kind of fundamentalist system that has more in common with King George or King Edward or King whatever in England in the 1700s than it does now.
Yeah. Yeah, does anyone doubt that if she could write into the Constitution, you have to be a practicing evangelical Christian to serve, that she wouldn't do that? She doesn't care at all about our system of government. She seriously doesn't. So finally, after all of this, weeks of having to remind the nation of what she actually believes, what Marjorie Greene actually stands for, to the extent that she stands for anything, she was in the end expelled from her committees. The House voted 230 to 199 to remove Ms. Greene from the Education and Budget Committees, with only 11 Republicans joining Democrats to support the move. We're gonna bring up a graphic of the 11 who actually did vote to remove her. We want you to learn their names, because they actually took a stand that, judging by the evidence, I guess was tough. Doesn't seem like it should have been, but there were only a few of them. And I also want you to get their names, because they're probably gonna be primaried and lose in the next upcoming election, because this is what the Republican Party is. But thank you to those who actually did this. It is pretty amazing that it's almost the same exact number who voted to impeach Trump. Like, Trump is the core of all of this, and she, according to people like Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity, is just some freshman representative, like Brett was saying. She's just some nobody. Then why is it as difficult for them? It's almost the exact same number. And by the way, it's less than one third of the number that voted for Cheney to get booted off of House leadership. So they're acting as if standing up to Marjorie Greene and all of what she represents and has said even recently is as difficult as turning on Trump himself. That means a lot. I don't know that it's necessarily immediately clear to everyone all of what it means, all of the ramifications of that, but this is something to bear in mind as we go forward, I think.
Yeah. She represents Trump. So here are the possible interpretations of people liking Marjorie Taylor Greene a bunch. And this is basically judging by the press conference she gave that no one should watch, because it's horrible and it just bad. Boring.
And she, by the way, she's not Trump in terms of delivering it. Like, she can say the media is fake news. It's not that Trump thing. Like, she can't hide that she's not a great speaker. She's not quick-witted or anything like that. She's just not.
Right. The benefit of the doubt is that Republican voters just want someone who's gonna be strong and fight for stuff. And the easy way that Trump has taught people to perceive that quality in someone is them attacking CNN and calling it fake news and asking for apologies and refusing follow-ups. But there is that, you know, Donald Trump has been a media hound, self-publicizing, you know, sell your soul for a buck person for so long that he knew how to handle it. Marjorie Taylor Greene has that thing that you're even seeing in Joe Manchin, which is like, what, me? I don't know. But she might have that perfection. Like, there are some casting directors in Hollywood who like dumb actors, because they'll just say the deliver it the most simply. And there's such an empty vessel for nonsense that that's what makes a good actor sometimes. And Marjorie Taylor Greene has a little bit of that, where she's just like, there's an international cable of people. And it's like, no, the line reads a little wrong, but you get the gist. Mm-hmm. And she just mindlessly regurgitates these lines in a way that resonates with people who are looking for essentially central casting. This, you know, Karen who is just randomly there saying stuff that they saw, that they've only seen elsewhere, written with a no serif font on like some horrible, terrifying QAnon meme.
Yeah. Exactly. And we're not gonna play any of the video of it. It's just bad. It's just they press just a little bit and she folds and she walks away. And I'm sure the Republicans see the strength again. They think Trump is an alpha and he's strong and all of that. It is his best con ever. And so why wouldn't they think that Marjorie Greene, just yelling, you're CNN, you're fake news. That's strong, I like that. She's fighting for something. Again, I get what you're saying, and I have no doubt that that's what they see it as. She's not fighting for anything. She is sort of weakly, ignorantly fighting against the media. That's about it. She doesn't stand for anything. The Republican Party, Trump literally didn't have a platform for his second term. If they're fighting for something, it's just to be a shield against vague stuff that the right has largely conjured up on its own, like cancel culture and stuff like that. But anyway, I'm not gonna show you the video, but really quickly, because technically she apologized for some stuff, even though she never said that she was sorry. There's also a lot of outs in what she said. So she said she believed that the September 11th attacks absolutely happened. Okay, that's good. Everyone should be able to do that. But that doesn't say that she doesn't believe the conspiracy theories that she said over the years. I mean, she didn't believe that a plane hit the Pentagon. That's not incompatible with some attacks happening. And her thinking it's an inside job that the Bush administration did, it still happened in that case. Who do you think did it? Or when she says that the shootings were absolutely real, okay, but she thinks the Democrats did them to take your guns. So who do you think did the shootings? Do you believe the actual, the commonly accepted story about how these shootings happened? All of these are like weaselly little things that let QAnon supporters and the InfoWars continue to like her and think, oh, I see what she's doing. She's got to do this because of the deep state. But she still agrees with us. And when she says this, her words of the past do not represent me. She said that I was allowed to believe things that weren't true. Never has a passive voice been more passive than that. You were allowed to believe things. Who exactly is in control of your brain if not you? Who was making you believe those things? You were the one going on the internet and accepting uncritically everything that you read for year after year after year after year. That's the thing you did. And if you've suddenly evolved past that, explain how that happened. And she's not doing that. She wasn't apologizing to anyone in particular. She was asked this morning to apologize to David Hogg. And she said, well, when I talked to him, he was an adult. So if I wanna earlier call him little Hitler, I guess I'm allowed to. The media should apologize. They're the ones who should really apologize. That's not an apology. None of this is an apology. If you are worried about what she believes, none of this is reassuring. Anyway, and then after she got thrown off of the committees, here is how she greeted the new day. I woke up early this morning, literally laughing, thinking about what a bunch of morons the Democrats plus 11 are for giving someone like me free time. That's an amazing cell phone there. But anyway, in this Democrat tyrannical government, conservative Republicans have no say on committees anyway. Oh, this is going to be fun. Okay, yeah. Who thinks she was going to be doing work anyway? She was going to be with a bunch of like policy aides, like hammering out legislation. Who thought that she was going to do that? None of her voters even wanted her to do that. They certainly didn't expect it.
In this Democrat tyrannical government, you mean when they have more power in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, because the people voted for that? Is that what you're talking about? That's the problem. But what am I going to do? Talk to her about like the terms that describe America? She's already proven at every step that she has no interest in even knowing or no capacity to know. Everyone out there, she's a congresswoman. She should know that like when there are more Democrats in the House of Representatives, they get more control in the House of Representatives because we're not a tyranny.
Yep.
Because we're a democracy. That's how it all works. That's like her saying, this evil monopoly game allows you to pass go. The tyranny of the man with the monocle. It's like, no, those are the rules, dude. That's how it works.
Those are the rules you agree to. None of it makes any sense. I mean, like who, Andy Biggs, one of the guys who said, you know, I don't agree with what she says, but I support her election. But wait, no, but do you? Because you voted to overturn you wanted to overturn the results of Georgia. That was the election she won, conducted on Dominion voting machines. So do you support it? You support Georgia, but just not that, like that one part you get, but like the state at large, you don't. None of it makes any, none of it's consistent. She thinks 9/11 was an inside job conducted by the Bush administration. She's running as a Republican, seems perfectly happy to be a Republican. None of it makes any sense. It's not all the school shootings were faked to take your guns, and then they just forgot to take your guns. None of this makes any sense. It's not an actual worldview where values are connected to policy goals. It's just all whatever sounds interesting and means that I get to hate the people I want to hate. It really is as simple as that. And so, yes, it's going to be fun. She's going to run around and she's going to raise a ton of money by saying more insane things. That's what she was always going to do. At least she'll have a little bit less power over legislation potentially.
But and also there's so much like sacrilege to what she said today, where she says, I feel bad and my God forgives me. That's what Christianity is all about. Well, that you know, you're telling God what he thinks in that situation. I hate to break it to you. You just told God what to do, which is the single biggest act of sacrilege I can think of. And then also at the same time, you're saying that your God isn't going to allow for, you know, it's sacrilegious essentially to be Muslims. But then also she says, I was allowed to believe things that weren't true. I think you glossed over it, but really like allowed to believe things. She is trying to abdicate any remote sense of responsibility for any of her actions. But she wants other people to be held responsible for stuff that they did longer before all of that in history. And it's just an absolute nightmare. And here is the thing, when you mention Andy Biggs and the way he words stuff, and Kevin McCarthy is the biggest embodiment of this. If you are one of Marjorie Taylor Greene's big supporters and you believe all the stuff that she said now that she is being forced to go back on and say she doesn't believe, everyone who's kept Marjorie Taylor Greene has let you down, because as much as she says CNN, that's fake news, she just went back. Like she went in front of everyone, hat in hand, relative to what she was doing before, and said, I apologize, QAnon is not a thing. She just sold all of you out. And then everyone like Kevin McCarthy is just trying to pat you on the head and say, I'm humoring you in a very superficial way. But I just protected Liz Cheney and I am going to do everything I can to do exactly what I did under the Trump administration from the inside. The deep state obviously doesn't exist. But the version of it that does exist that you're pushing back against is actually Kevin McCarthy. It's Kevin McCarthy and all the establishment Republicans who did one thing at all during Trump's presidency. And that was to give tax cuts to the rich. You got left behind. That was the platform. That's it. That's all that happened. And they're going to try to do that every single day. So they're kicking you out and everything is just lip service. And they got Marjorie Taylor Greene to turn. So that's my cynical approach and plea to all of those people that support Marjorie Taylor Greene. No one's there. And my personal opinion is they're doing the right thing in the House of Representatives to say, not here. This is not okay. This is too much. While we can't kick you out of Congress because you were elected by the people who sent you here, I am sorry, but you can't do more than that. Bare minimum, one vote for your district, proportional to population. That's it.
And finally, now that she's been kicked off, we know Kevin McCarthy was terrified about having to have a vote because now all but 11 of them are on the record as supporting her. Let's see. Was he right to be afraid? Is that a thing that is going to be effectively turned into some sort of campaign ad? We'll see. God only knows. Like how many people will there be out there who don't believe in QAnon in 2 years? We're gonna have to find out. Ever since Donald Trump was banned from Twitter and then thrown out of the White House, we haven't heard much from him in video or in audio or even in writing. But we've got a little bit of it for you, because apparently the Screen Actors Guild was holding a disciplinary meeting to consider revoking his membership. But before they could make any announcements, Trump sent them this letter. I'm not gonna read you the entire thing, but rest assured, every word is funny. But it starts off, Mrs. Carteris, I write to you today regarding the so-called disciplinary committee. So-called, come on, buddy.
Yeah, that's aimed the name at
revoking
of it.
That's what it is, yeah. Aimed at revoking my union membership. Who cares? Well, who wrote a letter about it? Anyway, while I'm not familiar with your work, I'm very proud of my work on movies such as Home Alone 2, Zoolander, and Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, and television shows including The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Saturday Night Live. No, but you hate Saturday Night Live. What are you talking about? You're proud of it. And of course, one of the most successful shows in television history, The Apprentice, to name just a few. No, dude, no. You named your cameo on Home Alone 2. That is not to name just a few. That is to name them all, basically. You have dug as deep as you can into your IMDb for that. He then goes on to say that television news wouldn't exist anymore if it hadn't been for him. And then he goes on to say that their union is a big failure. You've done nothing for me. And then the seismograph goes off for a little bit. And before they can fire him, he quit. Like a boss.
Brett. Donald Trump has so long been a try hard to lick the butts of Hollywood, to lick the butts of real estate developers in New York in this gaudy, ridiculous, horrible, offensive, go away now type way that each one of those groups has mostly shunned, or at least shunned in a way that Trump feels insecure about it enough to throw a fit every time he's remotely threatened. But I want to point out those cameos, as much as he's trying to say that like he got it, he got those cameos through sheer charisma and acting chops. No, 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 no. Some people know this, some people don't. But Matt Damon said, he told the Hollywood Reporter that if you want to shoot in a Trump building, which really other buildings are like, I don't need this. Trump's like, please, please shoot here. But if you want to shoot in a Trump building, he would make it mandatory in your contract that you had to offer him a cameo in the movies. Here is a quote from Matt Damon. The deal was that if you wanted to shoot in one of his buildings, you had to write him a part. Martin Brest had to write something instead of a woman, and the whole crew was in on it. You have to waste an hour of your day with a effing shot. Donald Trump walks in and Al Pacino's like, hello, Mr. Trump. You had to call him by name, and then he exits. So what we've been showing you, for those of you watching the video version of this show, is exactly that play out. So it's not far-fetched. It seems to be backed up by this Home Alone moment where he walks in, gets a cameo, says down the hall and to the left, and then leaves. And also, need I remind you, as he checks out Macaulay Culkin's ass, QAnon, John Lester.
Look it up.
This is what he's pointing to. That's the totality of his appearance in Home Alone. That's
he's very proud of that, Brett.
That's
he's very proud of that.
That's top billing, right? Home Alone 2 was the first thing he went to in his letter to the SAG Awards or whatever.
Okay, so really fast. And this is, he's very proud, not to mention many others. But notably, he starts off by saying to Gabriel Carteris, the head of SAG, I'm not familiar with your work, which is fine. Maybe he's not, I guess. But like, admittedly, I'm looking at her Wikipedia and she's done a bit more than him. I mean, NCIS is sort of a big deal, Criminal Minds, Avatar The Last Airbender, Nip Tuck, NYPD Blue, JAG, King of the Hill. I'm just jumping around, Johnny Bravo. She was on 145 episodes of Beverly Hills 90210, Another World. Like for literally decades, she's been in many, many shows. And I don't think that they were architecturally required contractual cameos. I think they were based on merit. I don't even know who she is. I don't know that I've seen any of these shows.
You would. She was a regular.
Yeah.
She was. She got pregnant in BH 9021.
Oh, I'm just saying, she's an actual actress. And yes, he's throwing a hissy fit. Thankfully, not on film. Actually,
My God, dude. It is so hilarious. And then not only that, but there's a part later after he says, I'm not familiar with you. She goes, he attacks them using a very specific YouTube video that he either knew. Criticize the guild, or he went looking for stuff to mention in his article because guess what, guys? Hate to break this to you. Donald Trump doesn't have a lot to do right now. He's pulling his hair out. He got asked to make a big cameo at his own impeachment trial. And I'm certain, like, when faced with the death of silent people silently ignoring him forever. Or absolutely incriminating himself in a total train wreck of a testimony in the Senate impeachment trial and forever just stamping out any hope that he has for a comeback. He's thinking maybe about doing it, you know, and everyone had to tackle him or not even write that he said no to it. But
and by the way, he has obviously constructed
what seems like a psychology as well as a social circle of aides and goons and stuff like that, designed to insulate him from the realization of what he is, what he's capable of, and all of that. But I would hope that cracks would be starting to form and a little bit might slip through when, like, Europe, you could potentially be convicted by the Senate and you were impeached twice. And you could have sat down with Mueller. And in all of those cases, everyone paid to protect you said, no, don't do it. No, you going in there would be a disaster for you. You talking, answering questions, you'd be doomed. I hope that some of that has gotten through to him, that there's nothing more incriminating to him than him opening his mouth in an area of like an open back and forth in Q&A.
Yeah. And the benefit of the doubt interpretation is it's him going like, hold me back, guys.
Oh yeah, sure. No. He's one of those people that's like, let me at him. And then like looks around, why aren't you holding me yet? Hold me so that I can say, let me at him. That's probably what it is. During this last election, it became increasingly clear that the Republican effort to hamstring the post office cannot be abided. It has slowed the delivery of mail, and in the context of an election, just can't be allowed. Now, this has happened as a result of multiple things. But one is that the post office has been hamstrung by a number of years by a requirement that was passed bipartisanly, by the way, but supported throughout by Republicans to require them to fund retirement benefits for literally decades. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars. No other department actually has to do that. This was the USPS Fairness Act, an earlier version of which cleared the House last February, would repeal the requirement. This is going to bring it back basically to parity from before that original change. The requirement that the USPS prepay future retirement benefits, a rollback supported by the 200,000 member American Postal Workers Union. Trump letter to the union head becoming soon. But anyway, as of right now, the Postal Service has so far amassed $56.8 billion in its retiree health benefits fund to fulfill the mandate, according to last year's Postal Regulatory Commission report, but it has been a struggle to get even there. In the meantime, the financial requirement has created a major economic drag on the Postal Service, causing it to appear to fall billions of dollars further into debt each year. Much of that negative balance only appear in the ledgers because of the 2006 mandate. So here's the thing, they were required to fund tens of billions of dollars of retirement health benefits going off into decades that no other federal department has to do. It would seem as if the fact that this is causing them to appear to be insolvent when they would be perfectly fine if they didn't have the requirement was the entire point of that thing. And yet a lot of people supported it. A lot of Democrats supported that when it was passed in 2006. So can they claim that they were bewildered to find out that it had this outcome? Or were the Republicans not the only ones that were clearly passing this so that at some point we could have more and more of this being passed from the USPS to privatized mail delivery? I don't know, but I do know that at least recently the Democrats have had to once again, sort of speak out in support of the USPS. So it is possible that this bill could save it before it's totally economically destroyed.
Yeah, the US Postal Service is much better from a user's perspective than the private alternatives for a couple reasons. One, it has to go everywhere, and two, it's way cheaper.
Yes.
So and those are the reasons that we want to have it around. And that is exactly why. And there are certain things that we as a society have determined are essential services, which we either now say are free or funded fully by your taxes, or in the situation of the post office, in the case of the post office. Sorry, we're doing some renovation work out here. It's just some random person in the street. Or they're funded in this case by stamps and you paying for it. And it's just so frustrating that they're trying to do away with that the reason why they're trying to do away with that is because of private interests making that the case. Mm-hmm. That's what's so frustrating about it, is private interests are pushing them to do it. And until people like us point out how ridiculous this is, then it is incumbent upon us to make sure that there are some political consequences for them taking things that are more accessible and not just physically accessible, but financially accessible and turning them into giveaway, socialist giveaways for their mm-hmm. or fascist giveaways to their cronies.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot more that needs to be done aside from just this bill. I mean, long term, this is probably the most important part because that requirement has just become increasingly crushing. But clearing out the newly installed leadership that's been put in since Trump would be very important as well, especially in the run up to future elections. Like if we want to, you know, be able to sort of replicate some of the easy access to mail-in voting and the application process and all of that, let alone the delivery of normal mail, it needs to be put back into the shape it was in at least a couple of years ago. So I'm glad that there are people, by the way, like Bernie Sanders, who's always prioritized talking about the USPS. Biden seems willing to do it, so we'll have to watch and see. Hopefully this can happen.
And the people looking to do away with it don't actually want to do away with the post office. That's it. It's just something to say. It's just either they have a financial interest in private companies that are taking that job away, or they're just trying to make some random generic point that's similar to them saying they're trying to take your guns away. It's just a rally.
I mean, I think it's the former, but yeah. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, so every week I throw someone in the trash, Brett throws someone in the trash, and the community does as well. I've got a real one for you today. Apologies if you're sick of this person. I get it, I am too, but this is too good to pass up. My garbage person with a very trashy reason for being in here is Marjorie Greene. And it's not about all of the conspiracy theories and all of that that we've gone over ad nauseum, the threats and the violence and all of that. No, it's a particularly trashy thing, actually. Take a look at the video that, thanks to Rick Strom of TYT Sports and Big Rick Energy, I had to watch yesterday.
Here we go. There we go. And then I gotta do one more thing. I always do this. I just love this guy so much.
Yeah, that was Marjorie Greene groping the cardboard representation of Donald Trump's crotch and running her hand over it. That wasn't 10 years ago. That wasn't 1,000 years ago. That was on the campaign trail. Now, this has generated a lot of conversation online, and she has been forced to respond to what she did in that video. Here is her response.
That is a sin, a disgusting evil that is unfathomable. I can't even believe that it continues.
I know, I can't either. Not everyone is against it, though. Here is what Matt Gaetz had to say.
Whoa, Marjorie Taylor Greene, that was so good. I almost had to smoke a cigarette afterwards.
Ew. Ew.
What is wrong with these people?
It was so,
okay, so those weren't actually so about it, good. But those are all videos from the last day.
It was so good. It was so amazing. I almost had to gouge my eyes and ears out after.
I wanted to pull a Sam Neill from that sci-fi movie and just scoop. No, it was from Event Horizon. I want to scoop out not just the actual eyeball. I want to pull all of the nerves out so that my eyes can never come back. And once again, have to watch that. We don't have a horny jail big enough for all of these Republicans. What is wrong with them? What's wrong with their home life? That they're going to work, they're going on the news. This horny. It's cardboard. There are better alternatives. They're available online with discreet packaging.
Talk about packaging. Emphasis on the packaging. I'm gonna be terrible. I'm not above anything. So there will come a time when Trump is so sad and depressed and hungry for days gone by that in some kind of post Whopper Jr. gorge fest of the Burger King himself could not fathom. Trump would look at Marjorie Taylor Greene in his food coma and say, yeah, sure, let's have a run.
But no,
Stop yep. it. No. It. By the way, Brett, as you were gearing up for that in the Twitch chat, your wife was saying, no, Brett, please don't. John, stop him.
But they're not. He wouldn't touch you, lady. And if he did, he would deny it. And okay. I think you both can do better.
So two things. One, for all of the terrible, disgusting things Trump did, he never groped a cardboard woman. Like she might be trashier than him.
He molested a flag.
Mm-hmm.
He drew like a penis extension from an anus that was that hurricane.
Yeah. Can we play the video one more time? Because I have one more point I want to make. And I want you, not that video.
Gorgeous.
The other video. The when she goes to grope him. Because look, I think we all understand that she is a kook. She is detached from reality. But assuming the video plays, I don't think that she has ever been as detached from reality as what you're gonna see in this video, because it's not just that she gropes at his crotch. Look at where she starts. How detached from reality do you have to be to think that Trump's starting down there?
That's so gross.
No, it's not. That's not what's happening.
The hand up and down.
Look, you can.
I'm usually into that. But not with that. It's not with that.
It's very weird. You know, I think that America has a lot of sexual shame and we're not very open. I think in large part it's due to, you know, religious people trying to make you feel bad, people like Marjorie Greene. That said, she's a full grown married woman and she's groping Trump. And they didn't mind. Nobody in the audience was like, oh God, no, that's terrible. They like the direct sexualization of that disgusting old man. That's what they want. And I want to be very clear because there's been a lot of attempts recently to sort of both sides Marjorie Greene. I don't want to see Ilhan Omar grope a cardboard cutout of Biden or Bernie or whoever. None of us want that. That's not a thing. No, you don't, Brett.
It sounds like you do. You came up with the image.
Anyway, oh God, it's so true. Like we send people in here for being bad, for being fake, for being horrible. But this is perhaps the trashiest reason a person has ended up in here. Anyway, Brett, who's your garbage person this week?
She's the person that they cast in the like to be the person who has sex with the lookalike in like some weird trashy porn based on Donald Trump and like Stormy Daniels. Like at a truck stop. My garbage person is Matthew Gaetz of hell. So Matt Gaetz, at a time when Americans are fighting for relief and so much action needs to be taken to make their lives better. Matt Gaetz would rather let them feast on a big old stinky pile of faux patriotic BS because he interrupted a session of a committee that he was on with Gerald Nadler to make a request for a completely ridiculous faux act of patriotism. Here's how that went.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to extend a welcome to the new committee members. I'm grateful to be back on this August committee, and I understand and appreciate the significance and importance of the work that we do. And I just think it would be nice if, in the spirit of national unity and national pride, which I know we all aspire to do to a greater extent, that at the beginning of each meeting, the chair or one of the designees of the chair would have the opportunity to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. We're all aware that in these times, it's important for the country to see members of Congress working together on some things. And while I know that we can deal with divisive issues in the committee, it would be my hope that we could start every committee with a great unifying patriotic moment.
It's unnecessary. The House begins every day with the Pledge of Allegiance. We're covered by that. There's no necessity to say the Pledge of Allegiance twice during the same day. So
for as much as the Republicans say that the Democrats are the ones that waste time and money in the House of Representatives and the government at large, I'm sorry, dude. That is a huge waste of time. And we all know why he's doing it. Mm-hmm. So that he can go on Fox News later that day and complain about how the war on Christmas ain't enough. Now there's a war on the Pledge of Allegiance. And guess what? Just like clockwork, Harris Faulkner is gonna give him that platform.
No.
Yesterday, I tried to introduce an amendment to the rules and judiciary just to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And because I'm a minority member, a Republican, every Democrat voted against it. And we won't say the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of the Judiciary Committee. That's just demonstrative about the control that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats currently exert over this institution.
Matthew Elizabeth Gates always looks like he's a dog with his head out the window. That is his role. Like that photo, that video of him, his hair looks like he's traveling at great speed, riding family dog in the Trump Winnebago. Like, it's so disgusting. It's obviously that. He says, oh God, they're really trying to take control of us. The whatever county GOP tweeted that, like they're making fun of the Pledge of Allegiance. No, they're making fun of you. You just created some BS target. That if we don't hit it, we hate America and the Pledge of Allegiance. No, you want to do it again? They already do it. They already do it. What do you want to pledge more allegiance? That sounds like you're being desperate.
I think you're letting him off too easy. I am shocked at how unpatriotic he is. I want us to always be pledging allegiance until we pass out, until there's no oxygen left in our brains. And he doesn't want that. Why doesn't he want that? This is such a stupid game. It would, as you pointed out, it would be a waste of time to actually do the pledge over and over and over, or at all. We could just get rid of it. That would be fine too. But it's a waste of time for him to bring it up at all, and then to be brought on the media about it. And this is a guy who thinks that cancel culture is like the biggest issue in the world. He gets immediate access to the mainstream media to talk about the stupid idea that he had. And
just to be a victim.
And we generally try, I'm only gonna say this because the audience is getting in with a lot of good ones. We try to keep this grounded in opposing people for the substance of what they say. Matt Gaetz makes that difficult because there is no substance to anything that he says. And at the same time, he's a horrible guy who mocks, you know, people who are suffering during the coronavirus. So I'll just say that he looks like he is in fact the congressman of Lazytown. Look it up. I just don't get how he looks the way that he does. It's really bizarre. He's not human. I really think that he might be something that Elon Musk cooked up in a lab.
So good. There you go.
Anyway, good garbage person. He's made it in there several times over the past year. Anyway, for the community garbage person of the week, I am assuming that Marjorie Greene wasn't on the list because she won last week. Can you confirm that, Marissa? Because I'm assuming that has to be why she's not there now. But anyway, at number 5 this week with 7% of the vote is Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema for stymieing progress in the Senate, not supporting reform of the filibuster. Number 4 at 10% of the vote is the GOP for proposing a shamefully inadequate COVID package and then stroking it in cardboard form. Number 3 is Kevin McCarthy at 15% of the vote for begging for Trump's forgiveness, you know, going down to Mar-a-Lago and meeting with him and all of that. Number 2 at 18% of the vote is Fox News for mocking AOC after she revealed her trauma. By the way, as predicted, Tucker Carlson did a whole segment about it. I was just so sickened by the entire thing that we didn't even cover it. But number 1 for the week with 50% of the vote is the Police Department of Rochester for handcuffing and pepper spraying a 9-year-old. That is a pretty good reason to be the garbage person of the week. So thank you to the 14,000 of you who voted. A lot of garbage to go around. And with that said, Brett, thank you as always. What can people look forward to on the network for the rest of the day?
For the rest of the day, we've got John Jank, Jingleheimer Schmidt. No, John Jank, and that's gonna be in my mind forever. And Aaron Ryan, host of the podcast Hysteria on Crooked Media, and writer for Always Sunny in Philadelphia, is gonna be on the first hour. Second hour is JR Jank and Adrian Lawrence.
Yeah, nice.
By a post game, and then later tonight, Common Room stars myself, Edwin Umanya, Craig Lowry, and Asher. Asher Caulfield, who produces specials. And so you're going to see some really fun people talking through some really fun things. So that's tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific,
9 p.m. Eastern time for an hour at twitch.tv/TYT.
That sounds awesome. Thank you, Brett.
Glad
to have you here.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.